Everything is better with chocolate, even this podcast. My name's Ty Erickson, and I'll be your host of the Private Label Chocolate Podcast. This is episode 6 of the Private Label Chocolate Podcast. Today we've got Dave Hansen on, which is the president of Client Tether. Client Tether is a CRM, a CEP, great software for client engagement, sales processes, action plans, pretty much everything to encompass sales and marketing and how it ties into growing your business. So let's go ahead and get Dave on. I know he's got a lot of value that he can add, and he's just a great resource. So let's get the episode started. Dave, welcome to the Private Label Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ty. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, great to have you on. I've already done a little bit of an intro for you, but we can do kind of a basic intro as well. Dave Hansen, like I said, is with Client Tether. And one of the main reasons I wanted to have Dave on today was to add some value to our audience, to our clients that jump on and listen to this. Dave has added a ton of value to me personally from a sales process standpoint, learning more about how to utilize customer relationship management, and then also client engagement, reputation management, stuff of that sort. But we can jump straight into it. Dave, was there anything I missed there? Anything else do you feel like you could add value before we jump right into it?
No, let's jump right into it. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, so I know we get different people from all different, you know, points in their career and their life and everything else. So if we can just start super simple, because we do have people that maybe just aren't even in maybe the software world or in the engagement world or in the process or even just in the basics of having a CRM. Some people are still using Microsoft Outlook or the Google Suite or whatever. Do you mind just taking a minute and kind of explaining, since you're in that world, what a CRM is, or maybe something similar along those lines, and then the purpose that that serves?
Yeah, good question, Ty. So I think most people are aware CRM technology has been around for quite a long time. You've got, you know, market leaders that built platforms that were specific to, you know, software sales like Salesforce.com and groups like that, that a lot of people think of when they think CRM. But one of the things that most companies need at any stage is a way to not only keep track of their client records, but take action upon those clients in a meaningful way. And so, you know, where you're doing one-to-one kind of hunting and pecking out of Outlook, or you've got a spreadsheet where you're trying to keep track of your clients and know what have I done or what have I said or when did I last talk to them. This is where CRMs can start to create scale in an organization. And even with that, a lot of analysts in the last 2 to 3 years have started highlighting that there's a significant difference between the old school CRM model and what they're calling now a CEP, a client engagement platform. And that's where I think there's, you know, a really new focus on creating platforms that actually do something to help create scale within a sales organization. I'm sure we'll talk more about that, but that, when I think CRM, I think good technology, necessary tool, but kind of a dying technology approach that is being replaced by newer, more automated and engaging platforms.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because when I talk to most people and they bring up a CRM, it's more so, you know, their response is, oh yeah, I make notes about my clients and, you know, set follow-up items. That's kind of the extent that they go with it. So I like the way that you put it. We've kind of evolved into this space where we can actually take action on those clients through the follow-up, through the notes, and kind of take it to that next level. Where do you see more value? Maybe what are some of the options when you're seeing you taking action on those clients? What are some of the options there that maybe people aren't aware of right now?
Yeah. If you don't mind me backstepping 1 second.
Yeah, and go I'll for leave it. Right. Yep.
When you said that, oh yeah, we've got a CRM. Most of the time when I talk to people that have been using CRMs for, I'm like, oh yeah, we've got Salesforce. Or, oh yeah, we're using a CRM, and they but to them it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I've got this annoying tool that I have to document my activities in, right? That's all the CRMs are for most companies. And
Or even
then
a
you talk,
micromanagement tool from a sales standpoint. That's a good point.
right? Yeah, those are the worker bees, right? The sales reps. Then you talk to the manager, and like, oh yeah, we've got a CRM. That's how I keep my thumb on all my guys, right? Like, oh, I know that Bob's making 13 calls, and I know that Steve's gonna, he's got 80% of his pipeline. Like, they're important tools. But now let's step into the question you just asked of what type of options are there, or how is the landscape evolving a little bit so that people can get a lot more out of these tools? There, so you can some of the behemoths, like, and I hate to pick on Salesforce because it is a good CRM, but they made a conscientious decision years ago to turn it into a platform and start pulling functionality out of it. If you use Salesforce 12 years ago, 10 years ago, it was a lot more useful than it is today out of the box, because they're trying to pimp out their partner marketplace and make extra revenue by from royalties from those apps being sold as plugins to their base platform.
Oh, gotcha.
And so that's actually one of the big market detractors from using a and it's also a tool that was designed for software sales life cycles. So if you're, let's say you're trying to do like run an HVAC company, or you're trying to run a small service oriented company, or some other type of business that's not a software company, you're gonna have to spend, weeks in training. You're gonna have to spend thousands of dollars to customize it, and your people will be constantly confused because the complexity of the platform is well beyond what you need. It'd be like saying, "Hey, I need you to go to the grocery store, hop in the 747, and try to fly over, 20 blocks, and then fly home." It's just way too much. Powerful stuff, but. So the options now are really designed more for the industries that need, lots of functionality but don't need all of the depth. So to give you some ideas, a lot of platforms now you can have integrated texting, integrated calling, you can have integrated, all sorts of different reporting functions through open APIs. You can tie into your operational backend, maybe your order processing, your fulfillment, your financial systems, whatever the case may be, and you can create rather than have one ginormous ERP type tool that does it all but costs a bazillion dollars, you can have a bunch of micro architecture tools that plug into each other.
Which to a lot of people that aren't in that world may be a little bit mind-blowing and complex. And when you going back, and again, I know we're not picking on Salesforce, but they're kind of the backbone to that word, to the CRM word. I mean, to date myself, the first time I used Salesforce was back in 2003, and it was just a kind of a play set to put in information. But yeah, it has evolved so much that I would guess, I know I didn't, I wasn't aware of all the options. And now you can be a one-man band and do what it took 20 people to do, 10 years ago, especially with the actions and, like you said, the back-end APIs and the plugins and stuff like that. And there is so many simple ways to do it now. It doesn't have to be this big monstrosity and programming. There's a lot of viable, simple options out there that can help you do essentially what the big boys do, at least that I've noticed in our own scenario with private label, with what we do. I didn't think it was possible until we had connected, and we'll jump a little bit more into that. But there is some very viable options. It doesn't matter what size you are, kind of to that point when you bring up the big behemoths and the bigger outfits.
Yeah, and one of the questions that I feel people need to be paying attention to, because there are a ton of options now, some of which you can get a little CRM that can do emailing, or you can get a little CRM that might do texting or might do task management for you. There are a lot of the micro CRMs that kind of are an end one. They have one little function attached to them. The key is asking yourself, what are the core functions that I really need to scale my company
Good
and
point.
scale my sales performance? And then how complex is it going to be to implement whatever it is we decide we need? Because you can get there a lot of different ways, but in the end, the easier the UI, the easier the rollout and implementation, and the easier it is to tie it into other systems, like lead forms, things like that, the better. And if you've got a platform you're looking at that's going to require a 3-day offsite training plus, a full-time headcount to try to keep up with it for the next, 90 days, like a HubSpot or an Infusionsoft. Those are powerful platforms, but they're designed for enterprise businesses.
Sure.
And the challenge that a lot of people have with those, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful at all, because they're great tools, but they market them to ma and pa shops who have no marketing department, no marketing expertise, and then they sell them these tools that then require them to take 3 days off to learn how to use them. And guess what? They have zero revenue coming in while they're trying to learn a platform that's so complex that they end up throwing it away in 6 months and being frustrated, where it's actually a good tool, just not for them. See, so finding the right tool.
Yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, coming from my background, being in like a mid, larger business, kind of going back into small business now with private label, it would be easy to get into an analysis paralysis where you start jumping into some of these software formats and your eyes just start glazing over and you're going, you've got to be working in the business and on the business. And some of these formats are so complex, you just kind of go, I can't do this right now. As to where, again, it's going to be biased, but Client Tether is something you can jump right in and start implementing immediately. It's very easy. And so, again, whether it's Client Tether or something else, there's, like you're saying, those are important things to consider, something that you can actually start at least walking with. And not sit there and get caught up in the analysis paralysis of the whole, picture.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. That's what you've got to avoid. And small to medium businesses have to be more agile and nimble. And that's really, I think today we're going to talk about several key things to be considering as you're looking at a CRM CEP type system. And that's one of the big ones is, okay, functionality, what do I need? And then complexity. If you can balance those two elements in your consideration phase, I think you'll come up with a pretty good, and we'll talk about a few more things too, but those are two key things to pay attention to.
Well, a few other things that I think is really key to consider as well. Again, you've got two different worlds. You've got the people that are probably really deep in the software world that know all the options, that have all the integration, that are really up to date on it. And then you've got some people that aren't. And it doesn't mean that those are the small businesses. It could just be people that, are in more of an archaic industry that haven't had to innovate and what they're doing is working. One thing that kind of opened my eyes big time is, being able to integrate all the different formats that you can engage with. And maybe this kind of takes us into the next subject, but, integrating not just a phone call, not just a face-to-face visit, but also integrating text, because that is probably the most answered or engaged with format, at least that I've seen right now. And so using the different connection formats to, for one, be creative, to find other ways to engage. And then also, like you were kind of alluding to, finding what works for you and then also what works for your client. You may have one client that likes text, another one that likes email, another one that likes a phone call. And then coming up and being able to create a plan around that allows you to cater to your clients, that's huge, to be able to communicate with them the way they want to be communicated with. And maybe, again, that's a segment into, maybe we can start talking a little bit more now that we've kind of got past the CRM systems and the options there of maybe what does some of the processes look like inside of a CRM or a CEP where you could start engaging more. What are some of the processes that you're seeing that people are using? And then maybe expand on what Client Tether does a little bit and what you use it for just in a sales process and in a planning format.
Ty, it's important for any size of a business. If you're a business owner or you're a sales leader of a three man or a 300 man team, to be answering the same question when you're considering at this phase, which is, who are my clients? Like, who is my ideal client? That's the most important question you can answer. And then what do they care about and how do they want to engage? Mm-hmm. If you can take those fundamental principles of sales strategy and marketing strategy, a lot of people call ideal client profiles or avatars, but if you know who that person is, how they like to engage, what their demographic is, how old are they, what you'll find is people under the age of about 35 their preferred communication technology is text.
Yeah.
And that's becoming the one of the bigger buying segments in a lot of marketplaces. A lot of the procurement people or a lot of the consumers that you might be working with are in that demographic now. So things that you have to identify, and you said this before, is what media are going to be the best way to engage my client. And sometimes you'll find that it's a mixed answer. Some of your clients love email, some love text, some love phone calls. And so you need to have strategies that can incorporate all of these into your engagement model. So now understanding also how frequently, like what kind of a cadence do you want to use as you engage your clients? You know, using, depending on what you sell and depending on, you know, your services, let's say, for example, you're selling a very high-end, big expense, capital expenditure tool or software or something like that. You're going to have a very different cadence and follow-up sequence than you would if you were selling chocolates, you know, private label chocolates to your clients. And it's because of the size of the sale amount and the more transactional nature of it. Some people say, "Oh, I can afford that. Let's just do that." And other people are going to say, "That's a $70,000 expenditure. We need to go through a 3 to 4 month consideration process." So those are other things to consider as you know your avatar and your product and your cycle that you need to consider as you're looking at these tools. And then how do you build automation into the process? Because once you define your process, now you can start to move into the world of automation, which is how you create scale.
Yeah. Good point. Now, maybe let's talk a little bit more, and I don't know if this is going too far ahead, but what does automation look like? So when you mention automation and processes, and then on top of that, frequencies and actions, different ways to engage, what are some automation options? Is there an easy way to explain that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, automation can be as simple as, you know, I mean, well, we're all familiar with the concept of you know, automation from like an out of office message, right? People have been doing that for 20 something years in mm-hmm. email, but what we're looking at is proactive automation, you know, and I'll give you some examples. So a lot of our clients are looking for ways to automate lead response. Most industries lead response or lead conversion ranges between 15 to 30 something percent. It's pretty dismal. If you think about it. So you're saying that your marketing department spends $1 million on marketing and you're only convert and each lead costs $150, mm-hmm. let's say, and you're only converting 15% of them. You're burning like, you know, $850,000 of marketing spend every year because you can't convert the leads.
Yeah.
There are a lot of reasons why that might be, but the primary reason that we've seen with low lead conversion is actually lack of immediate engagement. You know, that magical 5 minute window. In some industries, it's even smaller than that. If there's an immediate need for the service, like a restoration business, a disaster cleanup business, if you don't respond in seconds, they're onto the next form and trying to call somebody else. So,
what's really hard about that nowadays is because there's so many ways that people can engage with you between social, website, phone, all this different stuff. That's why what you're talking about is so important as well, because it could get overwhelming to have engagement coming from every direction. But if you have a process and a plan and an automation tool that's at least allows you to respond in a quick time frame, mm-hmm. It's a huge tool, especially if you're, you know, like private label, we're a small business. I don't have 5 people waiting to engage. I need to have a tool that allows me to at least respond and be timely to engage with those people from those multiple formats.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, the industry trends are people have been understaffing their businesses now for years, for less since essentially the recession in 2007, 2008, every business has been, you know, lean and mean essentially. So they're understaffed, and a lot of solopreneurs, entrepreneurs are definitely understaffed. And so, it addresses automation can answer that question of how on earth are we going to take care of the volume of incoming work? Some entrepreneurs are stuck, or business owners are stuck, because they say, if we were to put another $100,000 in marketing, we'd bury ourselves and we'd go out of business because we can't take care of the orders and create a terrible reputation. Right. Well, this can fix a lot of those challenges, either not having enough manpower because you to address your current need, or how do we scale without having to scale a 1-to-1 ratio of people's, or, you know, people on the team versus dollars spent. That's this where you can create engagement automation so that as soon as somebody fills out a lead form, you know, let's say on a Facebook page, a Facebook form, it channels right into your automation platform, your CRM, CEP, and that kicks off a text message, and then it makes somebody's phone ring in the home office, and they pick it up, and it tells them they've got a new lead, and they press one, and then they call the client within, you know, 30 seconds of the lead form being filled out. Those are some ways that we have clients right now automating processes, and they're and this is not made up. This is a real data point. We have one client that had about a 15% conversion rate on leads, put automation in place, and that went to 75% conversion rate.
I believe it.
And we actually have probably a dozen or more clients that they sit at like the 70 to 80% conversion rate on their leads, which is usually 2 to 3x their industry competitors. But it's because of immediacy of response. And that can only happen through, you know, consistently through automation.
Well, what's so important about that too is yesterday I was sitting down with a local branch here of a billion, you know, multi-billion dollar business. It's a household name. And they had the same problem that a small outfit would, is they wanted a process that was a response when a lead came in, whether it be one of their, you know, 100 salespeople that responds, but a uniform, consistent, timely response. And then, you know, at some point it could trickle down. But I see that adding so much value to businesses, big and small, even if you do have the people, so that you have a uniform, timely response that on top of that is feeding them down a funnel and maybe giving them the really important communication that they need to know even before they get on the phone or have a live interaction with somebody. So I see the huge value there. I remember I was talking to him yesterday and even brought up Client Tether, and they have the biggest softwares there is. You know, obviously they've thrown the money at it and said, you know, give us the best of the best, but they still don't have that process, that plan, and that automation that gives them that unified response and gives them the same product every single time. So I preach to people left and right. I'm like, you've got to have automation. You've got to have a process. You've got to be consistent. And then you've got to be timely. And you've got to have something that does that. And just because you spent $100,000, you know, dollars doesn't mean you have that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it still has to be built out. So not to go too much of a tangent there, but maybe we can kind of shift over. Was there anything else you wanted to add, like as far as a sales process or a plan aspect of that people should know right now, or something that they could implement into their business? Is there anything that comes to your mind immediately?
Yeah. I mean, the crucial steps, and this is, you know, small, medium, large businesses that anybody has to know, is they have to know what their sales process is. They have to know what are the sales stages and how do we engage at each of those stages. And until you've defined that, a lot of people call it a playbook. You know, larger organizations, you know, SaaS companies love to have playbooks. Most of them are underdeveloped and a little underwhelming, truthfully. But if you know, how does somebody get into one stage and out of it? That's good enough, right? Like, okay, I've got a net new lead. He's in a new lead sales status until something happens, until I speak to him or I leave him a voicemail. Then he moves into a contacted phase. And then you know, as soon as he reacts, then we have an engaging phase, right? Like, you have to have clear parameters that define exactly how your sales process and stages work. But then you need to have actions that you're taking within each of those steps that are going to result in converting someone either to the next stage or disqualifying them as a lead and opportunity and then getting them out of your pool. Both results are acceptable and important. But if you're thinking about your sales processes in this way and creating consistent and replicable, essentially plays or playbooks or you know, things that you can use to convert leads to the next stage and opportunities to the next stage and then close them out, then you're in a good position to start building automation. But if you don't have that first, you can automate whatever you want. And then you're going to have maybe better results, but you won't know if it's because you have the right playbook or because you just are engaging at a higher frequency. And it's better to have the strategy first and then implement the automation tactic.
Yeah, that's a super good point, because like you said, you can sit there and, you know, download or throw up all the information you want on somebody, but if it's not progressing and you can't diagnose what is or what's not working, then it doesn't really do you any good unless they're moving along in that process.
Yeah, I mean, an example of this is I work with some clients. They are, you know, they work with high net worth individuals. They want to engage them in their portfolio management. Mm-hmm. Well, you can ruin your reputation and the sales opportunity faster with mediocre or crappy automation than you can by not responding fast mm-hmm. enough. You know, if you send them 3 or 4 text messages that are a little irrelevant or not quite on cue with what's going to help promote him or move him to the next stage, you lose trust really fast. And so automation is great, but it's a two-edged sword. And we've all kind of been the recipients of lame, you know, MailChimp blasts. I don't want to cast any negative light on that type of a tool, sure. but you know, we all get that kind of automation and it's almost worthless. You know, the thoughtless drip campaigns that float around the internet constantly, that type of automation does not help. It doesn't help at all. Even though marketeers that are old school think it does, it really doesn't help much.
Good point. Okay. Well, I think that kind of covers that. And I'm sure that'll be some of these other, topics that we'll get into that'll kind of come in, back into that process management, but, let's jump into client engagement for just a minute. And I know that may mean different things to different people. And I know, does reputation management kind of work into that? I know this whole thing is such an evolving world, and I begin to wonder how much of it is because we live in a bubble of Silicon Slopes in Utah. But how does client engagement play into, I know that kind of plays back into what we just talked about, but is there another level of client engagement on that stereotypical term from a software standpoint?
Well, yeah, let me see if I can answer that question this way. With client engagement means something slightly different at every stage of the customer's life cycle. You know, with a lead, client engagement, well, they're not a client yet, so technically there is no such thing, right? But lead engagement is responsiveness, and you're giving them valuable touches, and you're building trust and rapport. So client engagement is a two-way street. One, as let's say the purveyor of fine goods, right? We're the business trying to sell, whether we're selling software, we're selling, you know, tricycles. Mm-hmm. You have to position yourself as an expert because nobody wants to buy from a buffoon, right? Everybody's looking for the expert in whatever space. And there are lots of people that are positioning themselves as experts and directing traffic, to businesses or services. Mm-hmm. So you want to position yourself as an expert, and you do that by sharing value. So in let's say you get past the lead phase and there's an opportunity, there's interest, you still create client engagement by providing them value and and that helps to develop trust. People buy from who they trust. And so the most common ways that people do that are they provide assets and resources, case studies, customer success stories, even interpersonal value added touches. And I think of a great client that I loved. Like, this was back in the days I was selling patent translation services for a good reputable company. I was the head of their enterprise team. So I was working with massive Fortune 100 companies and enjoying it. One of the companies I worked with, when we were visiting, she mentioned that her son was into the Titanic big time. He loved the Titanic. He was 9 years old. And as I was shopping for Christmas stuff, I found a 3D puzzle of the Titanic. It was like 12 or 20 bucks, I forget, at Barnes & Noble. Yeah. So I bought it and sent it to her. Well, that value-added touch in that customer life cycle created a level of engagement that's hard to attain. Right. And now this is not something that I'm saying, try to do this en masse, but you have to keep your eyes open for, processes where you can provide value-added touches, but also unique opportunities that will provide massive value to your clients. And that in my mind is how you create customer or client engagement throughout their life cycle as a prospect and an opportunity. And then post-sale, you can't stop. You need to stay in front of them with a little less frequency, but still with value-added touches. You know, if it's let's say an HVAC company, hey, how do you maintain your service? How do you maintain your cool air? What are signs to look for if there's a problem? Or how often should I change my filter? Or, you know, things like that. Or hey, it's the winter is coming. how do I make sure I don't get that nasty smell in my house when I turn my furnace on for the first time? Like, right?
Yeah. So how do you recommend that somebody does that? Is it just a matter of retaining that information and then, you know, following up on it, or setting parameters in your calendar, or, you know, for different occasions? How do you recommend, based on, you know, CRM and engagement and everything that we've been talking about, what are some ways that people can be better at that?
Yeah, well, one, they need to curate and create content. There are two different styles. It can feel overwhelming to say, well, how the heck am I going to create all of these valuable assets that look good enough to put in front of my customers? Yeah. Where you've got people that are not competitors to you that have created valuable content that you can share. So, you know, if I'm an HVAC company, I'm probably not going to share content from other HVAC companies' websites, sure. But if there's an association that, who's producing great content like that, a government agency that's sharing cool tips and tricks, whatever, for energy efficiency, something like that, I'm going to curate that content and then repurpose it, share it, maybe blog about it, and then share links to these outside sources that are useful for my clients. And then send them maybe an email blast or a quick text that says, hey, thought of you today, thought this might be useful. Here's a link to something about how to keep your furnace healthy. This is a terrible example, but you get the idea. Yeah. Like that's how you create the content. And then you create campaigns. If you have the right type of a tool, I don't want to brag on client tether too much, but that's what right. I live in every day. We can create simple, contextually relevant engagement campaigns that just stay in front of clients and trickle out valuable touches to them over time that help them, you know, implement our software or help them learn new features or help them, you know, think in different ways of how to create automation content so it doesn't sound canned and stuffy. They're just little things like that, as well as, you know, third-party articles that help give you ideas of what are the best greeting lines that you can use yeah. in emails, things like that.
Well, one other thing that I do that's worked really well right now, you know, going back to Client Tether, and I'm sure there's other formats and other ways to possibly do this, but is using, you know, tags of finding someone. I'm a big sports guy, so one way that I've always tried to use to relate to people is, you know, if they're in LA, I'll ask them, are they a Lakers or a Clippers fan or a Rams fan or whatever it may be. And then I'll document that. Yeah. And then, yeah, on the weekends when someone wins a game, I'll notice that and I'll send them a message saying, hey, you know, some kind of friendly banter back and forth. Or if they're, you know, I also document whether they're, what industry they're in. So when I do come across something that's like, wow, okay, this really applies and this would be a great tool for all my accounting clients, you know, along the point that you're talking about of being able to share that content that would apply to them. And it would be a little bit more personal, but yeah, it's hard when you get 1,000, 2,000 clients, you don't have any record of what they do, what their interests are, stuff like that. So that's one thing that I've worked that's worked super well for me is being able to tag my clients and then be able to refer back to those specific clients with value added content. You know, that actually applies to them, and then being able to do it across a wide format as well. If I have 100 clients that are Lakers fans, you know, it's not too hard just to shoot out something that says, you know, congratulations on the win last week, which is a personal yeah. touch.
And to them, it's a value added yeah. touch. You're recognizing and acknowledging that you know who they are and you care about what they yeah. care about. And you really do, other else you wouldn't have taken the time to document it in your system. I think a lot of people, the thing that concerns them about automation and like we're talking about is they feel like it can cheapen a relationship or people see through it. But the reality is if you had the time, you would want to do that anyway. This is kind of my barometer for knowing, is this an appropriate value added touch that's not contrived? Yeah. Is if I do it anyway, but I just don't have the time or bandwidth to try to do it at scale like that, then it's a really good thing to be doing with automation. And we could do an entire segment on segmentation, right? A podcast, how do you segment your audience, but you're capturing some key points when you start looking at how do I automate and keep things contextually relevant? You know, anytime you're going to give someone a value added touch, it needs to be actionable, it needs to be relevant, and it needs to be timely. And what you just did about, you know, the Lakers thing, there's nothing really actionable there, but it's relevant and timely, and that makes it useful. to your clients.
Yeah, and it's just a, you know, you do that and it is a format that's engageable, because usually, you know, especially when you're trying to build a relationship or trying to knock down some walls and find some commonality, I've found that when I've done that, I will get an email back that's like, oh, tough game, or hey, thanks for recognizing the win. You know, the Jazz did well last week. And those have actually been some of the starting points that have literally developed some of my best clients, my best relationships. And, you know, maybe hitting them from different formats as well. And like we talked about earlier, finding stuff that they enjoy talking about, and then just taking the time to engage in it.
Well, let's talk about an area that I think is critical, where most people tend to neglect a very important customer or important group of their clients, where the engagement is critical. And it's also got the biggest payout, which is with their current clients. I see this all the time. And very few people have a strategy or any sort of tools they're investing in. How do I engage my mm-hmm. clients? How do I stay in front of them, stay relevant? In our globalized world, there is a lot more competition. There are a lot more venues for clients to find answers. Yep. And so we've got to stay on our toes to make sure that we are staying in front of them. Yep. Now, I think, Ty, you probably have some good ideas to share around this because of what you do. I think you do it better than most, honestly, and it's creative enough and tactile, which I love. But what are some ways that you're handling that? Then I'd love to share a couple of things that I've seen as well in the industry.
Yeah, going back to what I've already mentioned a little bit, finding ways to get in front of clients. What I always tell my clients that use our chocolate, and when we try to add value to teach them, not just sell them the chocolate with their name on it, but teach them how to actually use the chocolate. I tell people, if you've got a bag of chocolate with you, you always have a reason to stop by your clients, whether it be a different flavor, whether it be a holiday. I tell them, you know, put a bowl on the front desk, put a bowl on the decision maker and anybody else that's involved, and go back and keep that bowl full. Whether, like I said, a different flavor, a different holiday, you always have a reason to stop by. I think that's where people really struggle, is they kind of go, man, I've been in there every single week and now it's just starting to get awkward. Well, where I feel like it starts getting awkward is when they're constantly in there with an ulterior motive of pitch, 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 sell, 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 as opposed to going in, like we've been talking about, and adding value of, hey, I'm just here. No strings attached. I'm going to drop off some more chocolate. Do you guys like chocolate? Oh yeah, we love chocolate. My boy loves chocolate. My aunt loves chocolate. My grandma. Oh, great. And then again, start to document those little things and those little wins and those little connections of, how can you add value? Maybe there's someone that's a diabetic. And then I usually tell them, look, we've got a sugar-free option that you could give them. There's so many different things and reasons that you can stop by. And it doesn't have to be chocolate, but just stop in and start to take note of things that you see, things that they say, and really focus on adding value to them, so that when you are stopping by, you could drop something off and have a conversation piece. That's really what I push on. And then also to be in there gifting when no one else is gifting. Everybody does the Christmas thing. Don't get me wrong. We love Christmas. We do a ton of business at Christmas. You've got to do Christmas. You got to do holidays. But I really teach people to gift when no one else is gifting. So maybe pick a different holiday or a different occasion or something different that can set you apart, that people will remember of, like, oh, St. Patrick's Day is coming up and so-and-so always comes into my office and drops off some, you know, Irish cream donuts or whatever it may be, but just finding those nuances and those things that are creative and unique, and then become branding yourself that way and just using branding technique. And that's kind of just some basics. You know, obviously there's birthdays and anniversaries and different things that go on in different points of people's lives or they're sick. You know, I always teach people to use chocolate to create messages, to stop by, and just always have a reason to stop by. It doesn't have to be that I'm going back in to sell.
Yeah. And let's shift gears too, because a lot of people listening to this podcast won't have physical access to their right. clients on any sort of right. regular basis. And so one thing that we haven't talked about, this, it's a tactic, but it's really potent, is the use of video.
Yep.
And I had a CEO that was hot on this, and I wasn't comfortable with this. This is, you know, 3-4 years ago. And yet after I thought about it and read some research on it, I thought, okay, this is actually a very smart tactic. I'm going to use it more. as I engage with clients all over the country, all over the world, actually, and started sending video messages and embedding. Now, people engage with video in a completely different way. If you send someone a video message just for them, there's a really high probability they're gonna watch it. Now, there are certainly things that help. If you're an attractive male or an attractive female leaving video messages, you tend to get a better click-through rate. But you can do creative things that catch people's attention. At some platforms that are free, like I love to use Vidyard. Yep. They have a free plugin in Chrome, and it's super simple. You can create animated GIFs of the first 3 seconds of your video. Jiffies. I forget that young kids call them something that doesn't make any sense anymore.
Are we getting dated? We don't even know the latest terms.
I call them GIFs all the time, and people are like, "What's that? Oh, you mean a Giphy?" Like, oh, yeah, whatever, a Giphy. I don't see a double FY on that, but that's fine. But it's because of the tool that people were using to create GIFs back in the. Anyway, sorry, old people chatter. So you can create intros that are super engaging and fun. Like I've been doing backflips on a trampoline for a client before. And videos from tree houses. I mean, just get creative and have some fun. And you'll find your clients love it. Like I had one client I did a video for, and there'd been a quality issue with a project that we did, and it's not typical. It wasn't typical for us. And so I got on, put rollerblades on, and I pogo sticked with rollerblades on, and just said, look, sometimes, you know, you get these crazy complex, you know, projects that come up, and sometimes you can nail them and sometimes you don't. They get more complicated, more difficult. We didn't do a great job. Sorry. And you know that we'll do a better job next time. And they loved it. I was watching the report on it, and I just kept seeing ping after ping after ping of people that were watching, which means they'd forwarded the video around.
That's awesome.
And they got some nice messages back. So you can use video in all sorts of creative ways to create engagement. Yep. Now couple that with automation, and man, like it's a home run, really. If you can create engaging content that's contextually relevant, that can be reproduced or reused. Now you're starting to create engagement at scale.
Yep, there's so many options. Yeah, and that kind of takes engagement to a whole nother level. And then you kind of jump into audio too. It's kind of like the reason why we even do this podcast. It's just another way for me to, you know, invite people on that I feel like could add value to our clients mainly, and anybody else that wants to tune in. And maybe they're, you know, driving to work. I almost feel like, you know, and there's a lot of other people out there that are saying this too right now, but I feel like everybody should have a podcast. It's a very passive way that if you can really add value to somebody else, why wouldn't you send it to your clients and say, hey, we were talking about this today. I thought you could benefit from it. It's just another way to engage and really engage passively. They can be driving into work and, you know, be listening to any content that you can put out there that could add value to them, regardless of what industry you're in. It may be landscaping that you could say, hey, have you thought about mowing your lawn this way and, you know, trimming your trees back so your lawn gets more sun or whatever it may be. So yeah, there's just so many ways. Like you said, you couple that with automation. It's just amazing what one person can do to where it took 20, you know, people 10 years ago.
Yeah. And let's talk about the ends as well. We're talking about the means here, but there are a couple of great books. One, I think, is called Jab, 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 Hook. Yep. One's called Give, 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 Take. They're the same book, essentially. But you give, and it's not with ulterior motive, although it sort of is. Like, you're genuinely trying to give people value, and people will give you value in return. And so with your existing clients, how do you harness the goodwill and the excitement about your product and services? Like, how do you really harness that and then give your clients some direction? This is another area where people should be automating, and they're not, especially small and medium businesses. More are now than they used to be, but we should be automating requests for referrals and requests for online reviews that build our online reputation. And there are different ways that you can create automation around those things. And again, something that we happen to do fairly well, but most small businesses are not thinking in those terms. And as soon as somebody gets in the door and they become a client, they're like, okay, now let me go bring in the next guy and the next guy. But if they were just to stop and think, well, how do I continue to engage, provide value to, and then derive value from my existing clients who love me? I mean, I get, I don't know, probably 70% of our new clients come from referrals.
Yeah.
And if I tell you a dirty secret, I haven't automated my referral request process yet using my platform. but you do and give enough value to people and stay engaged with existing clients, and look what happens.
So real quick, and not to cut you off at that point, but I'm feeling a little bit bad. So I have a lot of people that I talk to that probably don't even understand what we're saying as far as automation. Like there's probably a lot of clients that I have that are sitting there going, automation. And they're probably looking at it going, okay, I understand what it means to automate, but what does that actually mean? Like what, can you maybe take a few minutes and explain kind of in layman terms of what that looks like, say in client tether to automate a process?
Sure. Shameless plug alert, right? Yeah. So I'll give you this context, but just bear in mind, I'm trying to be fair here. There are other platforms that use some of the things that we're talking about. So I know people that cobble this together with four or five different tools. I'll even mention some of them to give you examples. Client Tether is a CRM that's got a CEP attached to it. So it's all your client records and everything are in there. It does your dashboarding and your reporting, your pipeline, visual pipelines, which you can see visually all your ops and people and click on them and go into their records. So it's got all that good stuff in it that you can get from like a, you know, Pipedrive can do one little piece of that, or, you know, other CRMs can do a lot of those little things. But now on the back end, you can build sequences, or we call them action plans, or other tools call them campaigns, where you can then program, say, I want to send a text message that says this, and it's tokenized, so it's personalized, and it feels like a Dave Hansen sending every message, even though I did write them all, but I'm not personally sending them all. And you can sequence those in time and what type of format. So a text message today at 3:30 p.m., and then an email in 2 days, and it makes my phone ring in 4 days, and then tell me who I'm calling, I'll press one on my phone, and then it'll call my client for me and record the call on my CRM. And the client history notes. I mean, you can create automation through those different media we were discussing before, email, text, phone call, and then task reminders, and even internal cross-team or third-party emails that are part of a sequence. And there are some pretty cool things that we're looking at adding in the near future as well that might involve physical media that you could be sending out too. But the idea is you create these campaigns with customized messages that are tokenized, meaning you pull in merge fields like first name or company name or things like that. So you can really write it, if you know how to write it in the right way, create automation through these different media that's really engaging. And you can use this in any application, whether it's a new lead engagement from a lead form. If you fill out my lead form, for example, on our website, clienttether.com, you'll immediately get a text message from me that's personalized. You'll immediately get an email from me with a video message and a link to my calendar. And then my phone rings. And maybe a week ago, I was driving down the freeway, going maybe a little fast, but my phone rang. It was Client Tether, so I answered it. And then I heard them read off the lead information, what the lead source was, and you know where they came from. So I pressed one on my phone, and I was within 30 seconds of this guy filling out the lead form. Actually, it was about 45 seconds total with ringing and stuff. But I was on the phone with the CMO of a major company that was looking at tools that could help his dealers automate lead follow-up. And it was funny, in that discussion, one of my first questions I asked him was, well, how long did it take me to get on the phone with you following you hitting the submit button on my lead form? He's like, oh, very fast. I was like, well, I mean, demo's over, my friend. Yeah. Like, that's it. You just live on how the automation works.
Well, and I'll give you kind of a personal testimonial as well. One action plan that I love running with what we do is on our first time orders. So, and this would probably give a good example of automation. When we have somebody that orders for the first time, we don't know always if they know kind of the process that it takes to have a, you know, private label chocolate made. So I know my time frames. When that order comes in, I can literally assign my first order action plan, and it'll automate, you know, 48 hours, it'll notify them and say, hey, your design should be done by now. You should have saw a proof by now. And then 48 hours later, they'll get something else that says, hey, it went to print. And then 2 weeks later, they'll get something that says, hey, you know, it should be coming out of print, going into production right now. And I won't follow it all the way through, but it's actually kind of cool, because like you said, going back to the videos, I have videos at each step that show what's actually going on. And then I have a complete video that shows A to Z at the very beginning of the automation process. But it's been amazing for us, because I don't have to sit there and worry and go, man, are my clients sitting there going, when is it going to be done? When is it going to be done? I'm actually proactively going out and, you know, pinging them. And again, it's automated, but it's value added because I don't have to sit there and worry about it and go, I wonder if they're sitting there going, where's my chocolate? Where's my chocolate? Where's my chocolate? I know yeah. the process they're yeah. going through. And by the time they're done, and maybe this will jump into the next sector a little bit on the reputation management, but I know the chocolate's been delivered. I give it another week for them to, you know, try the chocolate and experience it, but it drops straight into a reputation management action plan that then, you know, gives them the opportunity to give me some feedback. And maybe that's mm-hmm. a good segment. I didn't even mean to do that, but maybe that's a good segment to jump into, you know, after it's automated. How can you automate? And I know you mentioned this a little bit, but maybe explain real quick what reputation management, what's a basic definition there? And then what does that look like? How do you manage your reputation? Obviously, we're talking more so online than we are in person, right? I mean, obviously there's reputation for multiple formats. But if you can maybe just go over the basics of reputation management and then maybe just jump straight into how you facilitate that and how it helps your business yeah. and other people's business.
Yeah. So, and it's really fair and to be reasonable about what reputation management means. It's kind of both, right? It's managing the interpersonal relationship, providing value, like we've talked about, having engagement all along the way. And that results in creating a high reputation for yourself or a good reputation in the market. Now, what we're talking about specifically with reputation management here is the process of managing your online reputation on rating sites. So a lot of people are using Google. You ought to have a Google rating.
And that's affecting your SEO, right? I mean, just to define to people exactly. when they start getting into yeah. SEO, that's something that plays a big part.
It sure does. And people don't realize that. So having a good online reputation with Google impacts your SEO. You're having a good review on Facebook or on Yelp or on Home Advisor. Like there are all these different tools that people use depending on your industry and service that people will use. You know, if you're an app, I mean, a while ago, I don't know if anyone even uses CNET or download.com anymore, but your rating on those platforms determined really was a predictor of your download rate. Now it's, you know, your Google Store, your iPhone app, right? If you're looking at an app, three apps and two of them have 3.5 ratings, one's got a 4.2, which one are you going to download? We go through this process all the time now. So it's very ubiquitous, but as a business owner, we got to manage that proactively. We got to encourage our clients to give us feedback. Here's a shameless plug alert, by the way, but within our platform, the way we do that is we actually have a tool where you can build it into an action plan or a campaign for a new client, where let's say you send out a couple of, you know, post-sale or post-implementation follow-up saying, hey, how'd everything go? Well, you know, we're really excited to have you on board. Here's some value. And then maybe a week later, you send them an email that says, hey, we would love your feedback. It's critical that we know how well we did. Would you please, you know, click on the link below to let us know what your experience is like with us? And then it'll give them kind of a thumbs up, thumbs down window, an HTML page that's custom to them. And if they click on the thumbs down, rather than a typical process saying, hey, would you give us a review? And you link them out to your Google page. Anyone can do that with an Outlook or a Gmail yeah. account, right? But then you encourage people who are ticked to go to a third party source and publicly display their frustration rather than give you immediate feedback so you can then remediate yeah. it. So it's negative in two ways. One, if you don't have someone actively managing your reviews online, you might miss that for a week and then they're even more mad. Our process mitigates that, where if they give you a thumbs down, there's a form that opens up and they say, what's going on? That's not right. We want to fix it. Give us some feedback. Then you get an email and a text of your client's notification immediately to the phone numbers and the email addresses you set up. So, and then you can take immediate action. You can call them. You know, click on a button in our CRM and you're on the phone with your client. But if they click on the thumbs up, which obviously is the more likely case if you've been doing a great job with your client engagement, then you say, would you be willing to give us a review? And if they say yes, it'll take them right to your Google page or your Facebook page or Yelp or whatever you choose. And then, you know, they'll give you a review. We had one client that had not been doing this for a while, and he got, I think, 2,600 reviews rapidly. And you can imagine what that does to his SEO. Actually, you want to be careful. You don't want to you don't want to pound your review page with tons of positive feedback that can put a flag right on your account, but you want this to be a gradual and a consistent process.
I was going to, Dave, your, I was going to brag for a minute and say that we've had 30 in the time we started using Client Tether, but now I'm feeling a little bit bad. No,
this is like 30,000 clients, right? Like, right. No, 30 is great. 30 is great. And for what you do and the service you provide, I think you'll continue to get a lot more. And it's probably more healthy for your reputation with Google Analytics on the back end, their algorithms, than to get, you know, 1,000 reviews in a month. That usually flags your account.
But it is cool that I do have a process in place. I mean, think about it. If people are manually, this is where I could see as a marketer or a salesperson where your job would become overwhelming, is you're sitting there going, I've got all these clients and I'm sure they've got feedback, but I just, you know, I don't know how to go through it and how to do it. And I sit there and I don't have to worry about it. I have my first order process. It goes through, they go into reputation management. I know I can safely say that every single one of my clients that orders through me has the opportunity to give me a review. And probably due to the communication that I've given them through the process, through the automation, I have all 5 stars. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about chocolate, people are, you know, it's an experience and they may be eating a piece of chocolate while they're giving the review. But
yeah, it is good chocolate. Shameless plug alert, right?
But I can say, like, this is where it comes back for me. I sit there and I go, I think we're in the day and age, and I hope most people are finding that, like, quality of life matters. It's not a matter of how many hours you can work in a day and, you know, how, whatever it may be, you know, for you on the work side, it's like quality of life matters. And I can go to bed every single night and put my head on the pillow and not stress of, like, did I do this? Did I do this? Did I ask them for this? Did I communicate this? I can literally say, I know exactly what I did. And if I don't, I can go back into that client. I can see any automation I've ran. I can see any personal engagement. I can see any phone calls. I can see any of that stuff. And that's why when I talk to people and they're not doing this, and I was that person, especially when you're a small business, like private label, I didn't have these things in place. You put them in place and you just go, oh my gosh, like, I am a genius. I am a hero. And like, I am legit, like, in my client's eyes, they're looking at me. And again, it's not to my doing, but I look at it and I go, I'm really doing my best. Like, I am providing a phenomenal service for my clients. And they probably partly wonder why we're able to do what we do. People ask us how big our staff is. And when I tell them 3 people, their jaws just drop. And then they ask me on top of that, they go, well, what's your plan? When are you going to hire sales guys? And I go, honestly, I can't tell you that I have a need right now because I have processes. I don't necessarily have a need to just bring on a bunch of salespeople because I have processes that I can run that I can engage with multiple clients at a time. It doesn't matter how many hours I have in a day. Anyways, I went off on a tangent there, but it is something that I'm passionate about because my life has changed by being able to have these processes and these automated processes. And going back real quick while I go on my soapbox, but anybody that's sitting there going, oh, automation, it looks like, you know, you're sending out blast mass emails. It's not. It's I'm providing value. These are emails that I've written. And even if it is standard communication, it's stuff that they're not receiving from other people, from other vendors, from other sources. It's flat out communication. And whether it's automated or not, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't even matter a lot of the times how they perceive it because they appreciate the communication. Anyways, I'll jump off my soapbox, but I'm super passionate about that.
This changed my life comment, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of truth to it. Like, I've been in sales for a long time. I started selling stuff when I was 5 years old because I wanted baseball cards. I've told you that story, haven't I?
Maybe.
I'm not going to share it on this podcast. It'll embarrass my poor mother. But anyway, one thing that I've always felt in every sales job, no matter what tool I had, was I always felt like I'm overwhelmed and I can't keep up and things are falling through the cracks. And so when you have the key there is you defined your processes and then you built automation. That's when you can start to relax. And, you know, like when I'm in meetings sometimes 7.5 hours a day. like literally either driving between appointments and on the phone, or sometimes I have 7 hours of appointments during the day with Zooms and calls. And so when leads come in that should be routed to me, I don't freak out about it. I used to work in a place where we had a 5-minute rule to follow up, and everyone should have a 5-minute rule, but there was zero automation. Yep. It failed every single day.
Yep.
Even though everyone was on the same page, we had a receptionist trying to route leads. I mean, we had people literally walking around the office, knocking on windows, trying to see if someone was available to take the next lead, right? It was crazy when I think about it in retrospect, but we were trying to do our best. We had a full-time person who was spending sometimes 2 hours a day knocking on windows and routing leads and following up to make sure that people got engaged. Well, I have people that will literally book appointments with me from my automated messages, not knowing that they're automated. And within 20 minutes of the lead form coming in, I wouldn't have seen that lead for 3 hours after it got out of my block of meetings.
Well, and any salesperson knows that. Like, we all go out and we network and we sell and we knock on doors and we make phone calls and we do all these different things to build and grow our business. And then it's usually where, you know, whenever that cutoff time is, that's when you come back and you do damage control on emails, leads, notes, all this other stuff. And it's like nowadays you can flip the game on that completely on its head. You can automate people being able to, like you said, automate processes, allow people to fill, pick times to meet with you on your calendar, automate phone calls. So that when you do get home and you want to engage with your family or do something outside of work, you don't have to sit down and do damage control for hours on end into the night just to be a top performer.
Yeah. Agreed. And let's shift gears. If you don't mind, one comment I wanted to make about this was, how do you write content so it does feel engaging, even though it's automated? Because we've hinted at that a little bit, but I've got to share a funny story, maybe two. Literally this morning, I met with a client, a prospect. I had one of my clients walk me into their office. They co-locate in a big building. I was in that building presenting to a group of CEOs. He saw me and because he was in the same building and said, hey, he texted me and said, when you're done, come over to my office. So I did. And then he said, hey, by the way, I'm going to walk you next door and you're going to meet these guys. They need you bad.
Cool.
It's like, oh, okay. Cool. Thanks, man. And so I met with them. They came back and met with the CEO and the same guy again. And I told them, I literally showed them my action plan that I said, when I sign up a new client, I'm going to put you in an action plan. It's going to send this message. And I showed them the message. It was a text making sure that they were able to log into their account after we set it up. It's just basic stuff, right? But if you're a SaaS company, if somebody can't log in right away and they're a small to medium business, they'll move on to other things and you might not get their attention again for a week. And you're losing momentum, right? So I just showed them that. And then we created their account. And then, 30 minutes later, I moved them into this action plan and he got the text and he immediately responded and started engaging with me as if I'd sent him that message one-on-one.
That's awesome.
So if you write your content in the proper way, then people don't think about it as an automated message. They feel like Dave Hansen sending me a personal text. And because really, that's what it should feel like. And a couple of tips, if you don't mind. If you're using text, the big mistake I see a lot of people make is they write emails in a text format. You've got to think, okay, if I were to text my friend right now, what would I say?
Yep.
I wouldn't say, hello, dearest Stephen, how art thou? Like, you're not going to elongate things. It's going to be really short and clipped. You're going to use abbreviations. You might use the number two and the letter U to simplify things. Absolutely. Yeah. So you've got to think in the right medium mindset. That's one thing. But then you write as a conversation. Everything that we write should be a conversation. An email should read more like a conversation. And you should always, because you can create contextually relevant automation within our platform, like I know which lead source you're coming from, what you're interested in on my website. You need to make sure you're writing contextually relevant content for each stage of your communication, and you should be referring to prior communication in each successive step. For example, I tell people all the time, never automate, just automate and start pounding people with emails. You don't need to do that with a phone call. They should always get a phone call first. No questions asked. And there are other reasons for that we won't go into, but because then your first message to them is, hey, just left you a voicemail and thought you know, wanted to follow up, blah, blah, blah. In fact, also don't use the word follow up. It's like the worst word.
True.
That's like the email F word.
True.
If you're a seller and you're just calling to follow up, then you're failing because follow it up with, that's so cheesy and lame.
Well, that's why I always tell people, have a reason when you contact somebody, not just a, well, I'm just calling because it was on my calendar today. It's been 2 weeks. It's been a month. Like you said, I'm just following up. It's like, have a reason to call. If you were calling your friend to see how they were doing, you wouldn't be like, hey, I'm just following up with you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Got to be relevant and timely. I agree. But we could do a whole podcast about how to create
and content. Maybe we got
automated. That's engaging. Yeah. But those are a couple of good tips. Good tips. But yeah, if anyone wants to reach out, I'm sure they can reach out to me on your podcast page. But there's a ton. I really feel like I should start creating courses about this because it's sad. Even like lifetime marketeers that I see write content, it is legitimately terrible. It is so bad. True. And I had a couple of guys. He'd been a pro for like 20 something years. The guy had kids my age and maybe 30, 40 years in marketing. And I had to tell him to throw away all of his content that he'd spent hours building. It's like, this sounds like a pitch. Like nobody wants to be pitched in email or text or in person. Like you need to provide value and come at it as a conversation. And then he rewrote it and he did a great job.
Well, and that's where I keep, and not to get off on another tangent, but that's where I keep telling, people too, is you got to add value because the information days are over with. The days of in the past where people were depending on salespeople for information are over with. I can be down. I always use the example. I can be down buying a car. It used to be the type of thing where I'd be sitting there going, okay, why would I buy this car compared to this car? The reality is now that all that information is irrelevant and their pitch is irrelevant. I need them to help add value and facilitate me into what I want. Instead of throwing up on me, well, you know, you got to do this, you got to do this. Here's the pitch. I can get it on my phone within seconds. I know the value of the car. I know fair value. I know ratings. I know all that stuff. So it's like if you're not adding value right now, then you're failing because people can get information like that. That's no longer a problem. We can get all the information and more than we could have ever imagined. But so value, that's always the explanation I give to people, value is key. I mean, information doesn't do any good anymore. We've got all the information we need. So real quick, before we go on, sorry, and I cut you off. Go ahead and finish your thought.
No, I was just gonna add a valuable tip here. If you haven't checked it out yet, there's some really good resources that Google put out. They're about 8 years old now, I think, called the Zero Moment of Truth, ZOMT. If you haven't checked that out yet, go and research that. Get on YouTube, search Zero Moment of Truth, because this is essentially addressing, you know, Google did some research a while ago and said, look, we have to change the way that we market and sell because clients are so savvy now and come to us so prepared that you've got to reframe your entire paradigm about how you're marketing and selling. And so if you're not familiar with that concept, Zero Moment of Truth, go check it out. There's a ton of good, there are a ton of good resources out there that can help you with that.
I've never heard of that, so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, but you just regurgitated back essentially what it is. But there are some good tips that anyone should be paying attention to in there.
So how can people look you up, Dave? I mean, obviously, that's kind of a weird question. In today's day and age, people have already probably Googled you and found you 10 times over. But what is a good way for people to contact you?
I mean, you know, typical stuff, phone, email. I'm not going to put that on a podcast for obvious reasons, but, you know, LinkedIn's a great way to connect with me. I have a lot of people that connect on LinkedIn.
And then what's your,
because they, you know,
what about website? What's the best website for them to look into ClientTether and even contact you or?
Sure. Yeah. Just go, if you go to ClientTether.com, so like tetherball attached to the end of the word client. So two T's, ClientTether.com. I'm sure it's on the podcast
and
page too.
But that's, put it on there. But if you're listening, ClientTether.com, find Dave on LinkedIn, give him an explanation of who you are and you came from the podcast. Give him a warm request, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No blind connection.
Seriously, I got to be honest with you. I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to sales processes and consulting stuff. So, I mean, I. if somebody comes to me and has a legitimate question, they're going to get a viable answer whether they want it or not. Cause I just geek out about this
stuff.
Well,
so, and I will say that, and this is the last plug that I'll just give, is that's the other value that Client Tether brings to my life is, you know, having the resource of you and your team. And it's not just, well, here's a software and here's my IT department. They'll teach you how to set it up. There's a ton of strategy behind it. And you guys have just been awesome from that aspect. And that's really why I wanted you to come on the podcast as well, because there's more strategy than there is software, if that makes sense. And I don't even know if that's a good analogy or comparison, but there's a lot that has to go into it and set up and how do I do this? And not every person's a salesperson. Not every person's a marketer. Not everybody knows these different formats. Yeah. And you guys have opened up my eyes to a lot of stuff that I didn't know. So at the bare minimum, if you are listening to this and you're going, oh my gosh, my head's going to explode, just reach out. Like, you got to crawl before you can walk and you got to walk before you can run. And Client Tether is a great resource for that.
Yeah. Well, thanks. That's what we try to be. Honestly, our conversation initially about value adding to clients. It's funny. I worked with one guy that he's a good friend of mine now. I've started doing just some pro bono consulting over lunches, giving him ideas. Yeah. And, you know, 3 months later, he comes to me and says, Dave, I absolutely have to have your platform. I'm in a position now where I can't do it without your automation. And good. That's great. Yeah. I love those discussions. I love to be able to monetize on the relationships. Yep. But the reality is, I know that engaging people and helping anybody with these things, ultimately, it kind of raises the water level a little bit, helps everyone succeed. But then it always comes back. It always comes back.
I'm the same way with, you know, chocolate. Luckily, it's chocolate and people say it's not fair because I don't have to sell it. But at the same time, I spend most of my time adding value and saying, here's how the chocolate can add value and condense time frames for you. I don't ever go, hey, you should buy it. And, you know, here's the process. And here, I only answer those if somebody asks me. I just add the value and everything else takes care of itself. So.
I apologize, obviously technical difficulties. I lost Dave for a minute, but he was just talking about the simplicity of just getting started, whether it be a CRM, client engagement, automation, sales processes. He was just talking about the pure simplicity. I can definitely say Client Tether is that pure simplicity. You can get started. So again, sorry, lost Dave for a minute here. Let's go ahead and finish up the episode.
No, Dave, that's a great point. I know for me and our business personally, you know, we were able to crawl before we walked and walk before we could run with Client Tether, but it's something that we could implement right away. Literally the day that we sat down and we got set up and signed up with Client Tether, that same day I was starting automation plans. And I was actually starting to send out emails and do some other engagement through there. So it's so true. Regardless of who you are and where you're at, don't be, like Dave said, don't be overwhelmed. You can do it. And there's simple formats like Client Tether that can tailor itself to anybody. And you can get started and you don't have to overanalyze it.
Yep. Agreed. So,
anyways, we'll end on that thought. I'll put your information in the episode. I tell everybody this, but would love to have you back on. There's probably so much more that we can talk about, and especially just to add value to our listeners and our clients. But Dave, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for your knowledge. Thanks for the value that you've added here. And I would just say for anybody, don't hesitate to reach out to Dave if you want to learn more of anything that we've talked about. He's a great resource.
Thanks, Ty. I appreciate it.
No problem. We'll talk soon. We'll see ya.
Yep. Bye.